Patreon bonus episode. Today we're speaking to researcher Louis Stavhogen about the ongoing and pretty riotous protests, farmer protests in France right now that is getting very little coverage in the media, both abroad and in France. Despite there being a very serious, pretty widespread ruckus directly from the French farmers, there's really not a lot of coverage about it. As you said, even in France, when we spoke before, I think a lot of people are going to be unaware of this, which is surprising considering the amount of damage and actual activities, you could call them, that these farmers have been doing against the state. Let's just start with, what are they doing and why are they doing it?
So this all started around mid-November, and it started with farmers all across western France, central France and southwestern France turning signs of their cities upside down, protesting against new government regulations and laws that were voted, which then turned into government buildings being, you know, the entrance to government buildings being scattered with animal waste and agricultural waste and all that stuff. And then also, in some places in Brittany, supermarkets were also vandalized against the, that was to protest against the massive margins that supermarket chains were making off of local products, and also stoning of police cars in one place. And, you know, yeah, just lots of different places, because it's a very broad protest. It's happening everywhere in rural France. So these farmers sort of get together and plan out what they can do in their sectors. But they mainly stage protests by driving tractors into towns and just sort of stop traffic and also pour and cover public buildings, government buildings with waste.
Right, they're literally dumping manure, like piles and piles of manure outside government buildings.
And so some of the reasons, it's quite peculiar because there are loads of reasons. When you read into, when you listen to as well, what some of the unions have to say, what some of the individual farmers have to say, there's lots of, you know, it's all sometimes a bit confusing because there's rise in taxation, rise in regulations. It's mostly taxes on agricultural diesel and water, but also regulations, environmental regulations. And there's also the underfinancing of the ecological transition, which they call the sort of the eco-friendly transition of farmers. There's also they also protest against complicated administrations. So all the files that they have to give in are becoming more and more complicated, and it's full of rules and regulations that they sort of can't really cope with. Then there's also the massive margins taken by supermarkets. There's also the growing impatience waiting for the new agricultural plan of the government. There's also, you know, you listen to all of these people outside. There's also the ones who are against the free trade agreements of EU, against the import of other products. It's all over the place, really. Yeah, but what's really interesting is who are the unions that are involved.
Well, why is it that these farmers seem to have, and agricultural workers and various different kind of, that kind of industry, right? How is it they've come so active, so quickly, so well organized? They have a history of this, I understand. Do they have some kind of like network? How is it that they've managed to just completely shut down parts of France like overnight with these actions?
Well, they do have a very large network here in France. There is one massive agricultural, it's called the National Federation of Agricultural Holders Union, the FNSEA in French. And it's got a majority in the Chamber of Agriculture. And it's a federation of like 20,000 local agricultural unions. And so it's a massive union, but it's not a labor union. It's what we call a professional union. So it's a union for corporations. But anyway, that we'll probably get into that later. So they have this massive network of more than 20,000 local agricultural unions, which all communicate between them and can spontaneously spring into action like this, where, you know, in the span of, what was this, 2 weeks from mid-November to end of November, it just covered the whole of Western and Southwestern France, like everywhere.
And what's the current status?
It's quite interesting because the demands have sort of shifted. Now we're seeing protests more in front of supermarkets, and we are seeing more and more protests against the massive margins that supermarkets make. Like, for example, just some numbers that were given by farmers was like one farmer's apples were sold for 900% of the original price. His potatoes were sold for 650%. And eggs, like 500. So it's like they've realized that, you know, their poor living conditions and their very poor wages are, they're starting to realize that it's also because of these massive cuts that supermarket chains have been getting from their products, from selling them.
So they're basically getting mugged.
Basically, yeah. But that's not the only reason they're out there. But now it's turning into this. So that's why we've seen a supermarket entrance covered in you know, manure. And also, you know, that one supermarket that was stoned, the entrance was stoned. And this other supermarket in Brittany, where they did this free trolley operation. So basically they would just go in and tell everyone that they can leave with everything they've got in their trolley for free, which got shut down by police quite quickly, but was the one of the only things that got shut down by police. And that's one of the strange and one of the interesting aspects of these protests is the lack of police response or government response.
Yeah, well, what have the government said? Have they made any deals, or are they just kind of ignoring it, as it seems to be, from what I understand, kind of sidelined a little bit in the media?
Well, this all, you know, I mean, there is politics involved, obviously, like in everything that in France, actually. But also, there has been in France a historical sidelining of farmers and rural workers by, you know, leftist organizations and big trade unions and things like that. Also because the agricultural sector is very heavily on the right and on the conservative side of the spectrum of politics. And so they've grown. The differences have grown over time, and there has been less and less of a communication between the two. Because they're more, the FNSEA is a corporate union, so it defends corporations. And basically, the head of the FNSEA, which is supposed to be the farmers' union, is in fact the CEO of an international agro-industrial group specialized in human food, right? So they politically align with the government. And, you know, ever since the 6th of December, they've already found compromise with the government. They're one of the leading agricultural lobbies as well, the FNSEA. So, you know, they always find compromise with the government. They found compromise with the, what's it called? The pensions in the beginning of the year as well. They got they sort of negotiated a deal with the government and weren't therefore involved with the pension reform protests, because they got a sort of a side deal for agricultures, for farmers, sorry. And so, yeah, it's this sort of very, it's a very blurry line between this FNSEA and the government, because they sort of get along quite well, so there's no reason for the government to actually speak out on these matters. And that's why, you know, media coverage is very, very little as well, because in the end, when you go and see these people, their sort of their demands are not the same as what the FNSEA is actually working to get from the government. So it's quite weird, where there's actually a very big there's a very big difference in what these farmers on the ground are actually asking and the deals that their supposed unions that represent them are making. And so it's very odd. And even, you know, when you ask French people that are not involved in this world, they sort of don't understand as well, because the agricultural world in France has been, you know, marginalized from the rest of society, and that's also a general feeling that they have. They feel left out, and that's also part of the protests.
So what kind of groups are forming within these farmer protests? Is this like a organized thing by them, by their unions? What's the kind of structure?
There are two unions that you can see. There's this big one, the National Federation, the FNSEA. And then there's the what they call themselves the Confédération Paysanne, so the Peasant Confederation, which are the ones who were out there at Sainte-Soline against the massive water basins, and are very anti-industrial agriculture. You know, they want to go back to sort of reasonable and respectful agriculture. And these are the two big groups, and they pretty much hate each other because their goals are against each other. And Confédération Paysanne organizes itself in classic protests, like we see on May Day. They're there on May Day, for example. They're with the labor unions, and they protest whenever they can. But when you look at the farmers under the bigger union, the FNSEA, there is no real structure. It's sort of local groups that come out. There's this sort of happening where they dump manure, and then they sort of disappear, because it's sometimes sort of just unorganized anger as well, because there is a great amount of frustration in the agricultural world, which can't find a political way out, and therefore it's sort of just this sort of odd expression of it, where there's no real structure that organizes this anger into political anger. We're still at the stage of the expression, the raw expression, where, you know, they just dump the manure. There's nothing much more to it, actually, because the structure that is supposedly behind them doesn't really follow up.
Do you think there's going to be that stage where they do become more organized, or is this going to be more of the same, where French people, rightly so, kick off with the government and whatever, and then it just kind of fades away? Because I do feel as if Macron and many other leaders across Europe, their new tactic is just hold out until it fizzles away. And that happened with Gilets Jaunes. It happened with the protest this year. It happened with the revolt, if you like, from the suburbs. And I don't know, is it just going to happen with this?
Well, it always has with farmers. And that's, I think that's a problem that they are starting to understand, because when you look at sort of the last 40 years in the in the Chamber of Agriculture, this leading big sort of corporate lobby of agriculture has been losing votes, has been losing votes every single year, every single time they have an election. And other sort of more less industrial, more independent, like Confédération Paysanne, are gaining votes. And so there is like a tangible sort of awakening, I could, if you could say it like that in English, where they're starting to realize that, oh, actually, these people that are supposedly defending us aren't, and we're being mugged by these supermarkets that are actually mates with the people who are leading our union. So, yeah, I think, you know, sadly, you have to go into crisis to some places, you have to go into crisis for some fractions to understand where to go and what it means and how to politicize and how to organize. And, you know, I think next year we'll see more organization, I think, because there's a growing amount of people from the agricultural sector that are protesting with labor unions, with city labor unions. And there is this joint force that is forming. And I think sort of with time, it's going to come, but it's a slow process because you have to undo 60, 70 years of just a crushing conservative mindset in the agricultural sector that has to sort of come undone, because people need to start to realize what some things mean, right? And, you know, this isn't, yeah. So I think people will start to understand. But I think, yeah, you're right. Macron is also still holding on and just waiting for it to pass, like he's been doing with everything, and like he's going to continue to do. You know, there's just been this huge deal with this immigration law, and Macron came out to say that, you know, he's got 3 more years and he doesn't intend to stop here. So, you know, he's going to go for it and continue going against, going against public opinion, and just, he's going to leg it because this is it. He's not running for office anymore. So why bother, you know, compromise?
Yeah. What is the public reaction to this? I know that the riots and the fighting in Paris was mixed, and then when the serious injuries came out from the cops, actually I think quite a lot of people kind of became in favor of them, even if they didn't like the means at which they were doing it. They did kind of understand that the government has ignored everybody, so we have to do something. But this is something very different. This is agricultural. I can imagine people being against the urban riots and then almost probably like in favor of these ones. I could imagine it comes down along political lines like that. What is the situation? Are the public supporting this?
Well, the public doesn't really hear about this, so we don't know. Like, there is no. So even if you go on Twitter, there isn't much being said about this. I don't think a large portion of the population has yet understood what, you know, the struggles of the agricultural sector. And there is, and when I say in France that there is a massive gap, there is a huge gap. Like, people between the sort of rural agricultural sector and the urban working class, they don't really communicate. There is no common ground to communicate on because it's different cultures. And so, you know, once you sort of isolate the two, there is no communication between the both. I mean, not none, but it's minimal. It's not as big as it could be.
You would think that the kind of urban or Parisian protest movements would reach out perhaps to these agricultural protesters and be like, hey, yeah, different issues, but similar kind of cause, right? I don't know. I maybe I'm being naive, but I thought perhaps something like that might happen, because France is certainly more organized than other places I've reported on kind of public unrest.
Well, you know, I agree, because I mean, I'm all on board with what you're saying. And as we say in French, I'm not inventing hot water when I say that these two, you know, social groups would very much understand each other through their struggles, because the struggles are just in different places, but they're the same sort of sense of abandonment by the state. But these, you know, there are so many things that separate them, and there are so many things that also the state has cultivated as separation between the two. This whole, you know, rural people are more this, I mean, I'm speaking in complete stereotypes, right? This whole thing about rural people being uneducated and racist, and people from, you know, ghettos being majority, you know, being on benefits and being from immigrant backgrounds and coming here to steal benefits. You know, these sort of very big stereotypes are very much very present when you talk to these two groups. And so there's all this to be undone as well, because politics obviously has hijacked this. And it's, you know, they've succeeded in making the poor white person blame the poor, you know, immigrant for stealing their money and job, right? And that sort of... Yeah.
Yeah. The tale is old as fucking time.
Yeah.
That's what happens here, yeah.
Slowly, you know, thanks to social media as well, this is becoming undone. And I can't predict, right? I can't predict. I can only tell you what's happening now. But I can't predict what would happen. But I think, yeah, we're starting to sort of go beyond these things. I think people are starting to becoming more radicalized. So they're either becoming more radicalized towards one side or the other. Right. So I think some people are starting to figure things out as well. But it's a complicated situation, yeah.
Yeah. Have the farmers themselves released any kind of joint or, I don't know, any kind of communique or statements?
The ones under Confédération Paysanne, so the Peasant Confederation, which they actually actively want to call themselves peasants, because it's also a political thing to say, like, we are poor, we live under the poverty line, and so therefore we are calling ourselves peasants. So this is a very politically charged union. And they have, yeah.
That's cool, I like that.
And they are pretty cool. I mean, they're out there. They were at Sainte-Soline, they never fail. And they have released, obviously, countless manifestos talking about, you know, the society of tomorrow, and how we should change agriculture, and how agriculture should change in favor of, you know, a decentralized society and all these types of things. But the big protests that you see on Twitter, on the news, those big impressive ones, are the big industrial farmers' protests. And they don't really organize between them. At least I haven't seen it, and I've sort of looked through anything I could find. And the only, because they depend on this, FNSEA, and the FNSEA releases statements for them. And because there is a lack of media coverage, there is no possibility to make a statement, even, you know, independently. So all you get are sort of roadside interviews of an angry farmer, which, you know, is not, when you're looking for credibility, it's purposely, you know, done that way to not gain any traction as well, because people who watch the news are also people who live in cities, and people who live in cities have this caricature of the farmer that's angry. And yeah, so it plays into all these things that make it very complicated for farmers that are not unionized under the Confederation to sort of have an organized expression, because they're very much in this, in a chokehold in this big national federation. So there are no statements. There are just very angry individual statements. Yeah,
it's surprising that the government are kind of not really interested in this, because usually when the agricultural sector starts kicking off, that's when you see real immediate problems with food supply and stuff like that. Why is that not really an issue in France?
Because when you listen to the biggest union, their demands are actually quite sort of in line with Macron. You know, they're a very productivist federation, and you can't forget that they also assemble a massive amount of small or large agricultural corporations, which have the goal of the market, of expanding, of trade, of things like that, of going against regulations. And so, you know, Macron is not pro-regulation. He's not pro-environmental regulation. He's not pro-regulating taxes. He's pro-regulating taxes. He's not pro-taxes. And that's why they gave away so quickly on the diesel tax and things like that. They're not going to give away so quickly on the supermarket margins, but that's a very small portion of the farmers, because that's not their main concern. Their main concern is, how are we going to survive because you're taxing us so much and you're importing meat from other countries that don't have the same rules as we do. So it's a very much, it's a market-centered protest. It's not a living conditions, wages-centered protest. It's a very corporate-centered protest for most of these. And so they're quite in line. There's no confrontation, really, with Macron's vision of agriculture, which would be a very industrialized and international, sort of on loads of international trade agreements.
It's a very unusual situation in that respect. What's next for these farmers then, do you think? Are they going to continue with the actions, or do you think this is going to die out, or what? Like, where do you see this one going? I know we've kind of covered it, but specifically, what's your feeling right now?
I think the smaller farmers will definitely radicalize, because this is a question of survival for them. You know, climate change and all these things, and even in individual farmers, the FNSEA is pro glyphosate. I don't know how you call that in English, like glyphosate. I don't know. It's a pesticide that has been proven to cause cancer in farmers, families, and children, and the FNSEA has just lobbied for its use for 10 more years. And so I think individual farmers will start to probably, you know, understand what they're part of, and they will probably start to become more politically active, whereas the bigger agricultural corporations will continue their lobbying, because I think, you know, the individuals will understand with time that they are part of a lobby and not of a union, and therefore it's not defending their sort of individual rights to survive and to live in a better condition. And so I think, yeah, because 2024 in France is going to be a bright fucking year. And with the Olympics and all that, it's going to be full of strikes everywhere. I mean, it's been announced, and we're all sort of preparing for it. And so I think, you know, the people will get more politically active, and I think you can't sort of the government can't stop that because it's still out of their hand. And that's why they want such a big, you know, hand on social media, because they can tell, the government can see that whatever goes on social media is still out of their reach. And you get instances on social media where people in rural communities become more politically active because they hear about things that happen in the city and they agree with it. And yeah, so I think there's definitely, this year has laid a fertile ground for further protests and organization. Yeah, I think it would. But, you know, leftist organizations need to realize that they have to stop snobbing rural communities, because that's a massive problem as well. And that stops, you know, individuals from these places from becoming politically active, because they can tell that, you know, city leftists really think they're bums. And that's, you know, I mean, that's not only in France. I'm sure in the UK it's the same thing.
I was about to say, it's probably one of the biggest hurdles right now for the left movement in Britain, where we have this unusual kind of new, almost media left. It's kind of like left liberal, you know, journalism, yeah, podcast type left, where, you know, they call people gammon. I don't know if you've heard this term, gammon, and they think it's really fine. And it's basically the new chav. It's like the so-called progressive left version of the word chav. It's actually a deeply classist thing. And they will say, oh, no, it's just to anyone that's racist, that's what we call them. No. Racists are called racists. That's not what they're doing. What they're doing is they're creating this kind of almost mythical monster version of rural working class or Middle England working class and underclass as well. And anyone that goes, hang on, you're not experiencing what we're experiencing here. It's all very well for you in London, cosmopolitan fucking leftist podcast world, to say we shouldn't be doing X, Y, and Z, or we shouldn't complain about this, that, and the third, but we're living it, and fuck you. And very simply, these kind of people just go, oh, gammon. And then everyone goes, yeah, fine, these people are so-called gammon. It's absolutely revolting. But that's how it is, and it's been embraced by the vast majority of leftists here in England, and it's why they keep wondering, why don't the working class get behind this person or that person? And their conclusion is always, if it doesn't go their way, well, everybody's racist. It's like, wow, isn't the left meant to be for the working class? But not anymore. And that's how these fucking right-wing bastards just keep scooping up the people, because at least they're being listened to by the other side. Okay, they're doing it because they're cunts and they want to manipulate people, but they're being listened to, you know? No one wants to be looked down upon. No one wants to be made to feel shame for very real problems they have in their community. And yeah, bro, it sounds very similar attitude to what we have in England.
Yeah, and that's a massive problem here. Yeah,
sad. It's dehumanizing as well.
Yeah, of course, it? Yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's, you know, massive generalizations about people who live in, you know, sometimes such harsh conditions. Like, it's horrible sometimes to be, you know, part of a rural community, because you're just so abandoned by the state and the whole structure of the state. You have to, you know, drive for an hour just to be able to do something. You feel so disconnected from everything. You know, they feel abandoned by their country, so to speak, you know, the government, and by politicians that supposedly hold sort of the whole "we look out for people" discourse, and we need to all come together except for, you know, people we deem as, you know, rural racists. That obviously they have prejudice, you know. I mean, it's also a lack of sort of a lack of clear-sightedness to say, oh, but they're full of prejudice, these people who live in these villages. Well, I mean, you know, there are there's scientific explanations behind why people hold prejudices sometimes in these places, and you just have to understand why this happens, and everything's going
to
be fine.
Yeah, and if you keep ignoring them and pushing them to the side and mocking them, do you think they're ever going to not be prejudiced? They're going to continue to be prejudiced.
It's the cycle. It's the same as bullying a child. I'm not saying they're children. I'm just saying it's the same as bullying someone, right? It's the same thing. They'll just close themselves off, and then obviously then it's a field day for the far right, because they're going to go out there, tell them, oh look, they prefer these immigrants to you. So obviously that works, and then, you know, we're all, yeah, and then far right gets 40% and we're all fucked. But it's
right. But it's, rinse and repeat. It's been happening for the last 20 years.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's not just, yeah, as a conclusion, I think, to all this. I think there's also, you know, it's not just the farmers and these rural communities that have to come together and, you know, realize what's happening to them and what's happening there. I think it's also up to people who live in cities to realize that there's this massive gap between these two communities, and that we have to reach out to each other, or else we're, you know, this is very inhumane of us to leave people behind just because they're not part of our group. And that's, yeah, it's sad. But I think we're sort of growing out of that. I think, because when you listen to young people, at least in France, I think they've started to understand that this is wrong. And I think we're on the sort of glimpse of getting of some hope, but it's still quite far, because it's still very much rooted in these two communities, the differences and the prejudice they hold for each other.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it that the media are not really focused on this in France? I thought they would have had a field day with this, but it seems not.
That's a good question, and there are only theories about this, and nothing's very sort of sure, because it is weird. And when you look at, I mean, yeah, I don't have a clear answer about this, because it's quite puzzling, because you look at what happened, even if you ignore the, oh, but if some immigrant burns a car, we hear about it in the news for a week, and when these farmers strike, we don't hear about it. It's because they want to focus on people who aren't white. But that's not very true, because when you look at what happened in Sainte-Soline and those people who were labeled as eco-terrorists and were arrested across France after they all went out and fought against the mega pools in Brittany. I think there's something political, I think, to do with it, because they're very quick to film whatever is hardcore anti-establishment farmers that go and protest. But they're not at all adamant about filming these very much, you know, pro-system and pro-economically liberal society farmers, because, I don't know, yeah, there's just a difference in treatment. You know, even with the police treatment, you see the farmers under FNSEA, you know, just completely trash public buildings and nothing ever happens. And you get Confédération Paysanne farmers that go into a regional building and they get just literally thrown out by police and just very, very roughly handled. You know, and I think there is something ideological about it, because also in France, you know, then you pull the string and then you're on to who owns media in France. And it's in France, we have a very, very laxist rule about how much of the portion of media can you own as a billionaire? And contrary to lots of other European countries, we don't have a safety net. And so there are lots of cases of abuse in media monopoly and, you know, manipulation of sometimes of the news that can clearly be seen about things, you know, concerning Macron or things like that. So, but these are all theories, right? We can't verify these. So, you know, I don't know.
It's just odd. It's just odd. It's odd, yeah. Yeah, I think you're probably quite accurate there, though. Where can people find out about this stuff? Like, I've seen the Telegram channels, and I looked at that, and I didn't go and check French media because I didn't need to. I saw the stuff on the Telegram channels of the more independent people, and these videos were like, wow. Like, I think Caden put something on the Popular Front Insta as well. Like, it got pretty wild. And so it's surprising not to hear that. So where, if people want to, where can people keep track of this stuff?
There are no, like I said, you know, there are no centralized outlets. So you could probably go check out, you know, the Twitter or the website of Confédération Paysanne. You know, they're the more radical anti-establishment one. And they have very clear analysis on what happens and what happens in the rural and agricultural world. So they have interesting takes and they have interesting explanations about all this. But other than that, I mean, I had to sort of comb through so many telegrams and Twitter and just online, because there is no centralized place where we can learn more about this. It's extremely opaque and it's really weird. But yeah, there is no, and even like classic leftist sort of, you know, media or like or investigative journalists have not been covering this. Like Mediapart have not really been covering this.
Really? They're usually really good.
Yeah. Yeah, they're usually very good, but you know, they're not perfect, right?
Yeah.
So, there is a serious issue with this.
Sorry, the one I follow, just while I'm looking at it, I see it. Sorry to cut up. The one I follow is the anonymous citizen, as you're saying. So it's the @, so anyone that wants to look at it, just t.me/anonymycitoyen. They've been covering it extensively. They do some really good stuff.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, but they're like a relay point for like most of what happens on French Telegram as well. So they're true. Yeah, I could have thought of them actually. they're a pretty good sort of general. Yeah, but yeah, other than that, I can't really think of any other places.
Yeah. All right, bro. That is kind of depressing, but it's good that people know about it. Where can people follow you and keep up to date with your work?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, classic. I mean, I've only got Instagram. Yeah, it's Lima Sierra. LimaSierra. Sierra. SIERRA. _35mm film. Yeah, I gave it last time as well. But yeah, I sort of post some stuff about French, you know, what goes on in French society. Sometimes I post it in my stories because now people are starting to come over to check me out for the podcast that I've done for you guys. So it's pretty nice.
All right, man. Excellent. Thank you so much. And anyone wants to read your stuff, it's going to be in the next issue of Popular Front magazine, which should be printing by the time this goes out, I think. But yeah, man, thank you so much.
No problem.